Vegetarian Taxidermy by Kathy Dela Cruz. Sharon Thwing is a vegetarian taxidermist. The longtime Tucson resident greets me on a Saturday morning with the sound of little dogs yelping behind her. She's a petite 44-year-old woman, has gray hair and a pixie cut, and is dressed casually in a green t-shirt and blue jeans. She's holding the only non-chihuahua of the barking group. "Do you like dogs? This is Lizzie Lou. I'm holding her because she gets a little nippy, just with the back of people's heels." Lizzie Lou is scraggly, salt and pepper colored, and probably some sort of terrier mix. I say that of course I like dogs, even though I've always been a cat person. "My instinct with animals is to form a relationship," Sharon says. Her latest body of artwork is what she calls vegetarian taxidermy, though she won't take credit for the name. If you search the term online, you'll see lots of different people use that term to describe similar artwork. Sharon's vegetarian taxidermy is the fabric and plush stuffing version of taxidermy animal trophies. I first saw her faux taxidermy at a Tucson shop called Popcycle, which sells handmade local art crafted from recycled materials and reused products. Sharon is drawn to making work with recycled material out of her desire to transform one thing to another. When she first began making her vegetarian taxidermy pieces 5 years ago, Sharon had a pile of branches she would choose from to transform driftwood into antlers. Initially, she used to try and find the antler mates from her assorted pile. Now she tries to find the mates together from desert streams or rivers. What I've learned is that when you're looking for antlers from wood, you need to have them balance. They don't have to be exactly the same, but they have to balance. When I'm looking for them on walks or when I'm hiking or camping, I'm always on the lookout. It astounds me what nature does to wood. Seems more bone-like as water works on it. Because Sharon won't find an antler's mate from another tree, because it will be a different color and won't quite be the same thing, she tries really hard to look for its mate right away. Sharon finds it taunting to have one perfect antler without a mate, though she can sometimes make a unicorn from the single antler, but only sometimes, since unicorn horns are very specific. I was surprised to see very real skulls in Sharon's living room, hung above the fireplace mantle. I counted at least 11 skulls, artfully placed, all but the two largest cow skulls mounted on wood plaques, which Sharon found at thrift stores. Nearby to the skulls, Sharon had one of her vegetarian taxidermy pieces hanging, but a faceless version with real animal antlers, not the driftwood kind. Underneath this particular piece, which seemed to meld the fictional and non-fictional animal representation world into one, was what could be described as a vegetarian flytrap, or a piece of light blue canvas with fake plastic-winged insects glued all over it. There were lots of Mark Wright and art pieces floating around as well. Some hung on the walls, some just leaning against a piece of furniture. Vegetarian taxidermy is just what it sounds like. A vegetarian, no animals were harmed replica of a trophy that usually represents some grave harm toward a non-human creature. Some might see Sharon's work as art, some might see it as decoration, and some might see Sharon's work as a big contradiction. I see the pieces as all of these things, with a haunting idea lurking beneath its surface. These vegetarian taxidermy pieces present a pleasant and even cheerful representation of something dead. This paradoxical undercurrent is what drove me to seek out a meeting with the artist in the first place, after spotting Sharon's work at Popcycle. I'd been shopping for handmade local artist postcards when I came eye to eye with the faux animal heads. Sitting in a coffee shop, Sharon tells me that she has an appreciation for Mark Ryden, a painter who combines high and low art and pop culture with old techniques. Ryden, like Sharon, is someone who mixes images and forms that don't typically go together. His work, while childlike and aesthetic, almost always manages to have an unsettling quality rooted within its narrative. Sharon describes her other artistic inspirations as coming from old children's book illustrations of animals, woodland pictures, and anything that blends animals and people into one. Sharon says she has no idea how to be an artist. She didn't study art and only started making her work in adulthood. "When I get obsessed with something, I get obsessed, and I make all the time, and I produce huge quantities. Beads, quilts, dolls, purses." For Sharon, making her vegetarian taxidermy isn't just work or a hobby. "I feel like when I make them, they're just kind of being manifested in the world, and I'm just one more tool. I'm about on par with the sewing machine and the drill because I don't have a clear vision when I start of what it's going to look like when I'm finished. I have some ideas like, I want these two materials together and they'll look good on this plaque and these branches might look nice. But I don't know what it's going to look like. Sharon feels like the animals she creates are almost using her to get out into the world. She doesn't believe her creations are meant to be full animals, which is part of why she doesn't want them to look too realistic. Because they're not complete animals, they're something different. Next to Sharon's fireplace is a framed vintage restaurant menu marquee with movable letters advertising a creamy duck churro, Tennessee panda, and some sort of noodle broth. Everyone in Sharon's immediate family is a vegetarian, but the family regularly collects animal skulls every time they are on vacation. The hobby started when Sharon's daughter, now a senior in high school, was only 8 years old. The members of the Thwing family were driving with their windows rolled down when Sharon's husband and daughter spotted a deer skull on the side of the road. Spotting and retrieving the skull made the father and daughter duo so excited that it's become a tradition for the Thwing family to find a skull on every family vacation. The Thwings have deemed a skull to be the best souvenir they could ever bring home. Sharon, who is a master of making animal skulls, says that she is terrible at finding them. I'm not good about it at all. I never spot the skull. I never find it. Sharon once bought her husband a beaver skull for his birthday, but he decided it was cheating to purchase one, and now the Thwing family has a rule that all animal skulls in their home must be found. A couple of summers ago, it occurred to the Thwing family that they had been passing a treasure trove of animal skulls every time they drove past roadkill. By the end of the Thwing's summer vacation that year, they had a trash bag full of dead animals strapped to the roof of their car, and a cloud of flies following them the entire way home. It was really creepy, Sharon said, regarding the flies. When the Thwings got back home, they buried all of their roadkill in the family backyard and waited to dig the animals up to find their treasures, their souvenirs, their skulls. Sharon likes her family's collection of skulls for their sculptural quality. She believes the skull, since it houses the brain and eyes, houses the animal's personality and spirit as well. She says the skull resonates for her more than any other bone because of its demonstration of personality, more so than an arm, leg, or torso. Sharon leads me from the living room to her artist studio, and we pass the waiting room for her vegetarian taxidermy. These animals are waiting to be sold and shipped to customers or collectors. I see a deer with antlers bigger than his head. He is made from all different scraps of material. He has a blue nose, which matches the inside of his ears. He has what almost looks like green pearls around his neck. He is next to a jackalope with even larger antlers. Sharon recently started experimenting with removable antlers because PopCycle, who works as her distributor, has found it difficult to mail the creatures with their oversized antlers to customers out of town. This way, people also get to change around the direction of the antlers a bit, customize them. The jackalope is white with a tuft of black hair on the top of his head. He has a pursed mouth and black whiskers. He looks like he is sucking on a lemon and looking off to the right side a bit. He might not be a jackalope so much as he is some hybrid of fabric and wood. Sharon says her art studio is the neatest it's ever been. I tell her that I hope she didn't clean it for me, and instead of lying, she admits that of course she cleaned it for me, as I stare at a desk with vintage soup and sauce cans filled with scissors, pencils, and markers. Sharon has massive quantities of all of these items. The Thwing family will probably never go without scissors. I count at least 10 pairs in this area alone. Some are in cans and others are placed on the wall alongside hammers, hole punchers, and vintage artwork of flowers. She says her family has a decorating principle of the law of many, meaning the Thwing family finds a lot of almost anything to be more interesting and one of something to not have nearly the same impact. Sharon has a utility light hanging above the desk, and I imagine her working at all hours of the day to build her animals. Sharon is a mother of two, a wife of one, a full-time social worker, and works on her vegetarian taxidermy any chance she can get. Sharon likes to work outside during the day if she can because of the natural light. She finds afternoon light in her studio to provide an ample glow as well. For Sharon, making her vegetarian taxidermy is not just work. Some stages you have to be very focused and you have to be very present. And I love that feeling where it's like your cerebral cortex isn't really part of it. It's coming from someplace else, someplace out of you or someplace very deep in you. And you're just kind of observing. That's really fun. You're there, but you're not really in your head. I don't get that feeling in many other aspects of my life. Wall number 2 in Sharon's studio is my favorite. Long hand-sewn bags of mismatched fabric hang from almost as high up as her ceiling. I know what is in the bags, which almost look like extra-long pillows, before Sharon has to tell me. These bags hold the stuffing for her creations. I don't peek inside because I don't want to see. At this point, looking inside those bags would be like seeing Sharon's animals naked, or at least like seeing their make-believe organs. Above the pouches of stuffing are some branches. They seem too long and skinny to be used as antlers, and they are tied together in arch in a way that makes them form some sort of twiggy rainbow over Sharon's workspace. Sharon ties these branches together so they won't lose their mate. Wall number 3 houses a desk that, with the exception of some fabric dye, seems to be filled with inspiration rather than utility. Empty, uniformed in shape cologne bottles, a tiny teacup, Swedish clogs placed on a windowsill, yarn, a plate full of coins, a vanity mirror that is missing the mirror, and the first full-bodied animal I see from Sharon's vegetarian taxidermy collection. He is a small deer with a neck, torso, 4 legs, a tail, and the smallest antlers I have seen on any of Sharon's creations. He is alone. On that same wall are more branches and much more fabric. Some pieces of scrap fabric are in plastic pouches. This is the one room in the house the dogs are not allowed into. Though Sharon has started to use the blankets, which her dogs have partially destroyed in her newest pieces of faux taxidermy, blankets with dog-chewed holes are now becoming entirely new animals. Wall number 4 is almost entirely covered by a set of vintage lockers brought home by Sharon's husband, Mario. He is a school teacher, and when the school he works at was renovating recently, he was able to give Sharon a set of 20 small vintage lockers. Each one is overflowing with fabric, and the lockers look so old that I can almost smell the books and lunches they once held. Above the lockers are some vintage needlepoint pieces of birds and rabbits, mostly birds. There is a basket, 2 irons, and some pillows. I see one landscape painting, and it is almost as lonely as the full-bodied deer nearby. The way that Sharon's husband saves physical objects from being thrown out is the way he wants to save his own body after his death. My husband very, very much wants to, when he dies, wants to be able to give his skeleton to our children. It's kind of a joke, but he spends a lot of time talking to people about how he could legally go about doing this. I would not want a skeleton, his skull. I think that would be too much, but the kids would probably fight over his skull. Sharon's husband also saved the 1960s oversized flashcards, which now comprise the family's kitchen wallpaper. I see a gold watch, a collie dog, an acoustic guitar, a white roller skate, a 1960s cartoon vision of a robot, a female teacher next to a chalkboard, red jello, a 4-track, an apple, a television, an airplane, a stop sign, crackers, a peach, a boy, a mountain, the number 5, a gun, a postal worker, and a glass of milk. We're not done hanging them up, and I'm just ready to be done with this project. The flashcards look great, but Sharon seems exhausted from reusing materials in this area of her life, the kitchen. When I get into something, I'm insane. I just am. Sharon says it took an entire summer to cover one wall with these cards, and the family still has more cards to go. I turn my head and see more cards as wallpaper. Bread, a horse, a helicopter, a swan, a sad-looking little girl with a bow tie, a bicycle, a man on a tractor, a drum set, a house, a child playing hopscotch, a pear, a Volkswagen bug, eggs sunny side up, a kangaroo, an astronaut, a deer, a rotary phone, and a pineapple. Sharon says her family will be back soon and we should go somewhere quiet to discuss her work. The little dogs have stopped yelping and the house is only loud visually. Once at a coffee shop a few blocks from her home, Sharon reveals to me she got the idea to try faux taxidermy from Stuffed magazine, whose tagline is, "A gathering of softies." In one issue of the magazine, Sharon saw a faux fish trophy and was inspired. That and the fact that driftwood had always looked like antlers to her caused Sharon to take her first leap into making vegetarian taxidermy. Using a cummerbund and an old sequined sweater, Sharon made her first animal, a fish. Still, Sharon considers her first completed piece in the collection to be a ram, whom she put together by hand before she knew how to use a sewing machine. A ram she named Winslow. Winslow took forever, forever to make and was the only animal for whom she ordered glass taxidermy eyes. She decided to let Winslow be a one-off piece because his glass eyes were too expensive and, due to their realism, made her uncomfortable. The ram now lives over her and her husband's bed. Sharon was born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska, where taxidermy was a common decorating theme. She finds it hilarious that her father had taxidermy around his home, considering the fact that he wasn't a hunter. Sharon has been a vegetarian for 23 years and has always been drawn to taxidermy, and sometimes has to stop herself from buying it at thrift stores and swap meets, which is why she instead collects skulls. My youngest son would kill me. Taxidermy would not be allowed in the house. I'm a little torn. I don't have a strong feeling on taxidermy because aesthetically I love it, but then if I think about the fact that it was a living animal and this has happened to it, I feel bad. Sharon sees taxidermy as a safe way to make a connection and to also learn about animals that could never be household pets. I'm always surprised at how huge these animals are, how big deer really are. I think that some of my deer heads are so big, but they're nothing close to the real thing. And a buffalo, they're ginormous. And then to look at how strange their heads are and their bone structure, I can never get the bone structure to show through in my animals and where their eyes are placed. With taxidermy, you can look so close and see those details. But then if you let yourself think deeper, taxidermy becomes a testament to, I conquered this, I vanquished this animal, and now it's captive in my house. Sharon spends a lot of time studying an animal's face before she starts creating her art pieces. While she reuses material, she still doesn't feel like she makes the most efficient use of fabric due to her pickiness about placement of patterns or material. She also hesitates to describe herself as a careful tracer or cutter. She describes herself as not very precise, and she often loses her own patterns and has to start from scratch. Often while she's making her creatures, her hands get cut up by chicken wire and covered in scratches. She wrestles with her animals to get them made, or they wrestle with her to become alive. She says it takes a lot of physical strength to hold her animals down to insert just the right amount of stuffing, like they really are alive. After coffee, we went back to Sharon's house, and I was allowed into her bedroom to see her first piece of vegetarian taxidermy. Winslow the ram did look more realistic than her other pieces, even with his orange horns. His glass eyes looked somber. His fur looked realistic to the point that he almost looked uncomfortably pinned to his wooden backing. Winslow was positioned higher up on the wall than any of the other vegetarian taxidermy pieces in Sharon's home. His nose looked a bit like a heart. On one wall of Sharon's bedroom, I noticed an overflow of vegetarian taxidermy. A deer-giraffe hybrid, who was the most psychedelically colored of all the pieces. He was made of fabric with birds all over it, adding to an interspecies quality, and he was attached to a painting of a landscape like he was sticking out of nature, quite literally. There were at least six other creatures on the wall. My favorite was the pink hedgehog. I loved the way his quills looked like leaves from some sort of succulent. He even had two tiny arms that seemed to almost sneak into the trophy. He was positioned next to a white unicorn complete with single horn, the exception to the antlers needing the right mate rule. My eyes went back to the hedgehog, and now I noticed he was sticking his tongue out. None of the other animals did anything like this. I might actually buy this hedgehog to keep on my own wall. I feel like this is art that you can form a relationship with, and that's my hope, that people will have a relationship with it. It won't be something that's decoration in their house. They'll ascribe some personality to it, they'll talk to it, and a relationship will develop. In the future, Sharon sees herself making more three-dimensional landscapes, almost like adult playthings. She recently created a little wolf and trees on an old piece of wood. She would like to make more whole-bodied animals in the future as well, but is worried that people would think they are toys and then her animals would not be safe. As trophies, her animals live on the wall, high up, safe from hands and safe from harm. On my way out of the Thwing family home, I see a drawing of one of the little yelping dogs. The pencil drawing on white paper from two different angles is of Heidi, one of the Chihuahua mixes. Sharon's son has drawn a profile and full body view of the Chihuahua, who has only recently joined the family. In bubble letters, the drawing says, "Season of the Heidi." Sharon had said no to bringing in any new pets into the household, and then Heidi wandered in and bonded with her son, who has now been bitten by the artist bug. The Thwings are a family of artists. Their home is practically an installation. As I walk out the door, I marvel at this family who is standing side by side the way most families only do when they are posing for a picture.